meant to be reassuring, and missed the mark by about a mile. Sam unwound his tail from Fern's ankle, suddenly seeming to realize what we were talking about.
Hold up a second here, he said. I don't want to be turned to stone.
Megan's a Pliny's Gorgon, I said. She can stun or petrify, depending on what she's trying to do, and whether or not her hair is uncovered.
Can't petrify if the snakes can't bite you, said Megan cheerfully.
My wigs double as a safety measure. I'll be taking them off before I try to freeze the bad guys.
This isn't helping, muttered Sam.
Unless Megan's life is actively threatened, she's unlikely to be trying to turn anyone to stone, I said. But we need to know if you need sunglasses and whether she needs to be as careful around you as she is around me.
My mother was human, said Sam. If she can stun you, she can probably stun me.
It might be tied to the form you're in, said Megan. Sam opened his mouth to protest again. Then he closed it, sighed, and said,
You're going to do this no matter what I say, aren't you?
No, I said. If you don't consent to her looking at you, she won't look at you. He and Celia both relaxed. But, I continued, if you don't consent to her looking at you, you have to agree to stay here while I take her and Fern to go to face the Cabal. Sam's eyes narrowed.
No.
Then she looks at you. I shook my head. We need to know. You don't go into a fight without all the relevant information, and this is super relevant.
This feels a little like blackmail, Sam informed me.
I shrugged.
So, it's a little bit like blackmail.
I'm okay with that if it means you don't get stunned in the middle of a bad situation.
It doesn't hurt, said Megan. It's more like going to sleep and not dreaming for a little while. We can even stun each other if we work at it.
She glanced at me.
It's how we get around the lack of anesthesia in most of our hospitals.
Being a cryptozoologist sometimes means learning something new every day. I managed to keep the surprise out of my face as I nodded and said,
That makes sense.
Fine, said Celia.
I turned to look at her.
She shook her head. I want to be involved with this fight about as much as I want to gargle a mouthful of spiders. But people are screwing with luck, and that sort of thing paints a big target on the Jink community. Even if we don't have anything to do with it, this is going to get a bunch of us killed if it doesn't stop. So fine. Stun me.
Sam, close your eyes, I said. One at a time. I closed my own eyes, putting my hands over them for good measure.
I'm taking off my glasses, warned Megan.
There was a soft hissing sound from her hair, and then a thud as, presumably, Celia hit the floor.
She's out, reported Fern.
Sam? I asked. There was a pause before he said,
I'm not letting you do this without me.
Several seconds ticked by. Nothing happened.
Sam?
I asked again.
Nothing, he said. I'm going to try something.
There was a faint stretching sound. I'd heard it before. It was the sound of fur retracting and muscles moving to fit a human's musculature rather than a fury's. It was followed by a much louder, more distinct sound, that of a body hitting the floor.
He's out, reported Fern. I'm putting my glasses back on, said Megan. It's safe.
I opened my eyes. Both Sam and Celia were sprawled on the floor, unconscious. Sam was unconscious in his human form, which was strange enough to be unnerving. Since Fury was his default, he normally couldn't stay human when he wasn't awake. I think we need you as the anesthesiologist if we ever have to take him to a human hospital for some reason, I said. Megan's smile was half feral and very full of teeth.
My rates are reasonable, and I'm not the only Pliny's Gorgon working in the medical field.
That's good to know. I stood, beginning to gather the wreckage from our pizza party. Fern got up and joined me. How long are they going to be out?
No more than 10, maybe 15 minutes, said Megan.
She didn't get up to help us. Maybe she felt like she'd already done her part. Even her snakes seemed calmer, twining around themselves in a serpentine parody of a braid.
I didn't put a lot of oomph behind it.
Can you modify the oomph on the fly, or
Is this one of those things where you have to call your attacks before the GM rolls? I asked. Megan blinked at me slowly before she snorted.
Sometimes I forget how much of a nerd you are, she said.
I have to call my attacks, as you put it, before my target's eyes are closed. So, if you point me at someone and say they need to be out, make sure not to get in the way.
The thought of winding up a lawn ornament because I got in the path of one of my own allies wasn't appealing.
I nodded.
Got it.
Can human magic users deflect your gaze?
Not as far as I know, said Megan.
My dad's pretty paranoid. I bet he would have told me.
Awesome, I said. Fern and I finished cleaning up while Sam and Celia slept. Sparing them the physical labor seemed only fair, given that we were responsible for their current condition. Fern did pause to look at Celia and sigh wistfully.
I wish I wouldn't feel like a jerk for drawing all over them, she said.
I snorted.
Anyone drawing on me is going to get a bucket of water dumped over their head when they least expect it, said Sam.
I started a little, surprised.
You're awake?
I glanced at the clock. It had been roughly 6 minutes since Megan knocked him out. Not quite the 10 to 15 she'd guessed, but that made sense. He hadn't gone down until he'd changed forms. He must still have a certain degree of resistance.
Can't quite convince anything to move, but yeah, he said. Feels like my whole body went to sleep.
Can you change forms?
Not sure.
Sam's brow furrowed. It was like watching someone try to shake off a shot of Novocaine after a trip to the dentist. He relaxed again.
No. Which would be less upsetting if this hadn't just happened.
It's muscle control, not anything more serious, said Megan soothingly. I had never heard her break out the doctor voice before. She saw me staring and flashed me a thumbs up. As soon as the paralysis wears off a little more, you'll be fine. It's unusual for you to even be awake right now.
I'm an unusual guy, said Sam, and opened his eyes.
His lips twitched as he tried to frown.
Your ceiling is dull.
So paint it, I said.
So don't, said Fern. Lowry doesn't allow employees to paint their company-owned living areas.
So move,
said Sam, and transformed, skin rippling and limbs lengthening, until the monkey man I had come to see as the real him, the him that mattered, the him I was rapidly falling in love with, was stretched out on my floor. Immediately, he leaped to his feet, displaying a level of muscular control that was virtually unthinkable in a human athlete, and stretched, fingertips brushing the ceiling.
Better, he said.
Agreed, I said. Sam smiled at me, shyly again, and for a moment, I almost forgot that I wasn't allowed to touch him yet. Fern cleared her throat. I jerked back.
As soon as Celia's awake, we can move, she said.
Is there a plan, or were we just going to storm the castle? Because Lowryland has a lot of castles. I don't think we should go storming them all willy-nilly. It felt like it should have been the middle of the night. A glance at the clock confirmed that it was only 6:30. The media buildings would be closed. The cabal would still be there. Colin and Emily never seemed to leave before 9, and half the time my lessons had been held when the world was dark, on the days when I had morning shifts to deal with.
Here's the plan. Kick their asses.
I looked at Celia, sprawled on the floor like a dead thing. Make them understand that they fucked with the wrong group of weirdos.
And then,
get the fuck out of here.
Sounds good to me,
said Sam, and cracked his knuckles with a sound like a small-caliber handgun going off.
Let's rock.
Chapter 20. Sometimes leaving survivors isn't the kind option. Sometimes it's a warning to others. Francis Brown. Heading for the Lowryland Public Relations Building. Ready to rock. Rocking had to wait until Celia was awake, for several reasons, the most important of which was that we were going to be using her car. It was simple logistics. Megan was driving a beat-up green Corolla that worked great for getting 3 people to the park, but really wasn't equipped to ram a gate. Also,
out of all of us, she was the one planning to stay at Lowryland long enough to finish her medical residency. Any pictures of our little adventure needed to leave her out of it. We could get her to the admin center through the time-honored method of putting someone in the back seat across the laps of everyone else there under a blanket. Traffic cams are everywhere. I was going to be wearing sunglasses and a big floppy hat, which should be enough to keep me off the Covenant's radar. But if Lowryland security decided to check the footage later, they needed to count 4 people in the vehicle, not 5. Fortunately, a Gorgon's gaze isn't like a drug. Once somebody shakes it off and opens their eyes, they're basically ready to roll. Once Celia was awake, we were 5 minutes from hitting the road. We wouldn't even have been that far if I hadn't wanted to give everyone one last opportunity to change their minds. No one did. Whatever else happened from here, it was going to be all of us. So there we were, 5 people crammed into 1 mid-century American muscle car, Sam in the front seat and Celia behind the wheel, while Fern and I, both in floppy hats that hid as much of our faces as possible, rode in the back, Megan stretched across our laps. The gates to the admin complex were supposed to be locked at all times, requiring ID cards and verifications to get through. Even if that failed, the guards were supposed to be there, checking everyone against their computers before they allowed anybody to enter the secret fastness of the Lowry Empire. It was their bad luck that when we pulled up to the gate, it was to discover that entire stretch of wall dark. Celia looked at the rearview mirror, directing her words at me. Localized power outage. They're not uncommon around here, sadly. Sometimes it's rats chewing on the substation wires. Sometimes it's alligators chewing on the rats. Either way, we're in the clear.
No, we're not, said Fern, and I could hear the frown in her voice. This much good luck for us means bad luck for you later.
Try to keep me alive, said Celia. She got out of the car, walking around to the wooden barrier that was supposed to prevent intruders from just driving onto the property. It lifted easily when she pushed on it, apparently designed to be operated manually. She got back into the car, and we drove on. The power outage had been even more localized than I'd initially assumed. The streetlights scattered around the parking lot were on, casting every rock and remaining car into stark relief. Celia chose a spot that was close to the public relations building, and also to the fence that separated it from the nearby swampland. She killed the engine, hands still resting on the wheel, and stared at the greenery on the other side of the chain link.
Anyone wants out? This is where you say so, she said.
Does that mean you want out? I asked.
No.
Her chuckle was utterly mirthless.
Tav would tell me to run like hell, because the life of every jink in the world isn't worth my own. Let me be a species of one if that's what it comes down to. But Tav left. I'm a widow, and I make my own choices. And I say these assholes need to pay for fucking with a force of nature that was never meant to be theirs.
No one else said anything. The moment stretched out until it seemed to fill the whole car with silence, until the whole world was silence. They were waiting on me. I took a breath. All right, I said. If things go south, scatter. Megan, I'll hit the swamp, she said. Nothing there can hurt me.
I'm not leaving without you, said Sam,
utterly calm, like he was talking about ordering another pizza.
So if things go south, I'm grabbing you and heading for the highest ground I can find.
Given where we are, that's in Lowryland, said Fern. Regroup at the Midsummer Night's Scream? Fairyland's closed. It's the safest place to go.
The fact that she was talking about breaking into one of the largest theme parks in Florida like it was no big deal was as endearing as it was accurate. I nodded firmly. It's a plan, I said. Let's go. The night air outside the car was warm and humid, hot enough to have been an Oregon summer, even though the sun had been down for almost an hour. We walked across the parking lot to the public relations building, where the door, as always, was unlocked. That was where the bad luck caught up with us. We stepped inside just as one of the conference room doors opened, And Emily emerged, followed by Sophie Vargas Jackson, my old cheer captain, the woman who had believed, for all the time she'd known me, that I was a victim. Emily froze, eyes going wide in surprise and shock. Sophie did no such thing. She took us all in with a single flick of her eyes, identifying Fern and Megan as Lowry employees, and clearly filing Celia under the same category. No one could know everyone who worked for the park, not and have room in their heads for anything else, before stalking toward us. "You bastard," she hissed, and slapped Sam, hard, across his human-seeming cheek. He took a step backward, more out of surprise than in response to the blow, and raised a hand to touch the spot where he'd been struck.
"What the hell, lady?" he asked.
"You bring her here to make her resign?" she demanded, eyes fixed on Sam. "You think if you get her away from us, you can make her yours again?" Her next sentence was in Spanish, venom dripping from every word, enough to make the language barrier almost inconsequential. Sam blinked.
I think you have me confused for somebody else.
Does she have you confused for someone who is not an employee of Lowry Entertainment, Inc., and thus has no business in this office? Emily unfroze, taking a brisk step forward. Miss West, what is the meaning of this intrusion? Her tone promised retribution. The last 24 hours of my life meant I didn't care. People who were trying to wreak retribution were almost always people I was allowed to punch, and I was really looking forward to that right about now. "I need to see Colin," I said, and turned to Sophie. I wanted to take her hands. I wanted to thank her for everything she'd done for me, for trusting me, for giving me a place to lick my wounds and heal before the world remembered I existed and compelled me to start moving again. I couldn't do any of those things. She would never have been willing to leave if she'd understood what was happening. And I didn't dare touch her, not when I didn't know whether her luck was intact. With my luck, she'd secretly been a therianthrope this whole time, and touching her skin would strip her protections away and leave her vulnerable in ways I didn't even like to think about. Instead, I said the thing I knew would make her feel better without actually being a lie. "Sophie, this is Sam," I said. "I met him about 6 months ago, and I love him, and he would kill any man who hurt me. He's not the reason I had to run. If anything, he's the reason running broke my heart."
Hi, said Sam, looking a little dazed. "Nice to meet you."
"Melody loves you?" Sophie looked him up and down, cheeks reddening slightly. "Sorry I slapped you then, but if you hurt her..."
"Ma'am, I'm not intending to hurt her, and if I did, I promise you, I'd regret it."
Sam managed a small smile.
"Melody is the best thing that's happened to me in a very long time."
"I think I may be sick," said Emily. She pushed Sophie out of the way, literally pushed her, sending the other woman stumbling to the side, and moved so that she was standing directly in front of me, our noses only an inch or so apart. "Mr. Brightman is not currently available. As your employment is in question following this little stunt, he may not be available in the future. Leave now. It might save your job."
"Ah, but will it save my soul?"
I shrugged expansively. "Sorry, Emily, but I'm not here to save my job. I'm here to save Lowryland." "What are you talking about?" asked Sophie. I managed barely to suppress my wince. Sophie was a civilian, a human civilian. I was almost certain, like 95% certain, and she didn't need to be here for what was about to happen. Luckily, I wasn't the only one on the scene. "I can explain," said Megan, stepping forward and reaching for her glasses. I closed my eyes, opening them only when I heard the soft sound of Sophie hitting the floor. She looked a bit like something discarded, lying there with her limbs akimbo and her face slack, artificially at peace. Emily wasn't at peace. Emily was staring at Megan, eyes wide and mouth slightly open, hands raised in a complicated warding gesture.
"A Gorgon," she breathed. "You brought a Gorgon to the public relations department. Are you insane or just stupid?"
Megan pushed her glasses back up her nose, getting them seated firmly in place before she said primly, "My parents taught me not to sling around words like insane as if they were insults, so fuck you very much, lady. And fuck your little ward, too. If I'd looked at you, you'd be on the floor."
"Sam?" I said tightly.
"On it," he replied, and scooped Sophie into his arms, carrying her to one of the plastic chairs in the corner. They were designed more for show than for any semblance of comfort, but at least she wasn't going to wake up on the ground. She'd probably have a raging headache, and no idea what had actually happened to her. Those were small things when compared to the potential consequences of keeping her conscious. "I need to see Colin, Emily," I said again, with as much dignity and patience as I could scrape from the bottom of my heart. There wasn't nearly as much as a good Lowry girl would have found. Being used did that to me. "I know he's here."
"How?"
"Because you're here, and you're too much of a company girl to waste resources on yourself alone." I took a step toward her, my flameless hands balled into fists at my sides, like that would somehow call the fire back. It wouldn't. I knew that. But it would sure make it easier to deck her. "You're a route witch. Ask the road what you should do." Emily's eyes widened fractionally, her gaze snapping to my companions, reading and assessing them as she tried to figure out how much trouble she was in. To her credit, she didn't accuse me of telling lies. She already knew Megan was a Gorgon, and since none of us were passed out, having looked away or closed our eyes as necessary, it was clear that all of us knew too. Whatever my companions were, they knew enough to know that route witches were real. "The road is not a toy, little girl," she said, in a patiently withering tone. "You're interfering with matters so far beyond you that you might as well be an insect crawling on the pavement, struggling to understand things that have never been yours to know."
"Insect imagery," I said.
"Nice." I unclenched my fists, slowly flexing my fingers to limber them up. "Do you read a lot of Cold War spy novels, or does that sort of thing come naturally once you become an evil mastermind?" "Oh, wait. You're not the evil mastermind here. You're just the route witch." "Does the road even talk to you anymore? Or have you used up so much of what you should have been that this is all you get? Just the paths of Lowryland, and the charms you put on innocent guests to rip their luck away?" This time, Emma's flinch was visible. There was no way it wouldn't have been.
"How do you know that? How can you do that?" I countered.
I could see my allies out of the corner of my eye, falling into position behind me. Sam and Celia were to my right. Fern and Megan were to my left. And this was all going to end so very, very poorly. And there was nothing else we could have done. Having a duty to the cryptid world means having a duty to the human race at the same time. And to the people who blur the line. People like Sam, who had one human parent and one yokai parent. People like Emily, whose humanity was unquestioned, but whose abilities were preternatural at best. People like me, who should have had fire in my fingers instead of cold ashes. Her eyes narrowed.
"You have no idea what you're doing.
You're throwing your future away. You used your magic to hurt people who never did anything to you. What right did you have? Luck isn't a toy. Don't you sound like the pious little killjoy." Emily shook her head, giving our group one last look before she raised her hands to the level of her face, palms turned outward, showing us that they were empty.
"I surrender."
I blinked.
"What?"
"I said, I surrender. I give up. You win. I am your prisoner." Emily sounded almost bored, like she was reading a script someone else had written, and which she didn't think much of.
"You can do with me as you like, and I'm assuming that what you'd like is for me to unlock the elevator and take you up to have a little chat with Mr. Brightman. Am I correct?"
Yeah, I said, exchanging a glance with Sam. Every alarm bell I had, and a few I would have said I didn't have, was ringing. But we needed to get to Colin. We needed to end this. Sam nodded marginally. So did Fern.
All right.
I turned back to Emily. All right, I said. Take us to your leader.
We left Sophie asleep in the lobby, where she'd hopefully wake up, assume she'd dozed off from overwork, and go home believing our entire encounter had been a surreal dream. It wouldn't help when the next day found me missing from the Lowry complex, but it would at least keep her from charging up the stairs, looking to stop whatever bizarre nonsense was going on. She didn't deserve to be hurt by this. No one did. That was really the problem. No one who came to Lowryland, whether they were looking for a temporary escape or for a whole new life, deserved to be hurt by a group of irresponsible magic users who thought that being able to do something most people couldn't somehow gave them the right to do whatever they wanted. Sometimes people did things that they deserved to suffer for, like licking bees or using poison ivy for toilet paper. The world is not infinitely merciful, but this place was supposed to be an escape. It was supposed to be a fantasy that anyone who could afford a ticket was allowed to be a part of, unjudged, unharmed, without fear. Emily, Colin, and their little cabal had taken that away. Also, they had taken away my magic, and as soon as I got it back, I was going to set all their arrogant asses on fire. No matter how much I'd wished the flames away when they were making my life difficult, they were still mine, and no one got to take them from me. Ever. The theme from Mooncake played in the elevator as we rode slowly through the length of the building, reduced to pastel blandness by whatever process is used to create ambient sound. I twitched, unable to calm my nerves. Emily didn't help. She studied her fingernails, ignoring the rest of us, calm and unruffled and perfect in her iced lilac business attire. She didn't look like she'd last 5 minutes in a fight. She didn't need to. She was a route witch, and she had her own tricks. Belatedly, it occurred to me that an elevator was its own form of transport, a box that moved like a ship on the sea. Could the cables pulling it along be considered a road if I cocked my head and squinted? She'd already managed to twist her magic enough to use it as a weapon when it was never meant to be. Were we running along a road in the company of a route witch? As if she could hear my thoughts, Emily glanced my way and smiled, stretching her fingers straight before lowering her hand. When this is over, remember that you asked for it, she said sweetly. The elevator dinged. The doors opened on the large, mirrored room where Colin had conducted my first lessons. Emily motioned toward the opening. After you, she said. Sam shoved her out of the elevator. She stumbled into the center of the room, stopped, and turned to blow us a kiss. That was all the warning we got. It wasn't enough. The elevator door slammed shut, and we fell. Chapter 21. Gravity doesn't play favorites. Enid Healy. Locked in an elevator, plummeting to our dooms, which was not exactly the plan. Megan screamed. Fern's feet left the ground as she bled off density, the standard sylph response to unexpected stress, and she promptly slammed against the elevator roof. Celia backed into the corner, pressing her hands flat against the walls and bracing herself. It wasn't hard to believe that if we hit the ground, she would be the only one of us to miraculously survive. Seeing all her friends die might even be enough bad luck to counterbalance her lack of injury. Sam grabbed my wrist with fingers that were once again too long to be human and dusted with a thin covering of fur. I looked up at him, and despite the grim situation we were in, it was almost comforting to see his transformed face. It's amazing how quickly we can find a new normal.
Annie,
he said, voice tight.
What do we do?
We were still falling. Bissick said we shouldn't have still been falling. The public relations building was 5 stories from the outside, and the room where Colin had been doing my training had been at least 15 stories up, and if either of those things were true for the elevator, we would already have hit the ground. Emily could be using route witch magic to bend the distance the elevator traveled, giving us an extra amount of down and letting us gather more speed as we approached terminal velocity. The impact would hurt a lot more this way. But maybe it was a good thing. It gave us more than just farther to fall. It gave us time. Boost me up,
I commanded. Sam didn't hesitate. He let go of my wrist and grabbed my waist, hoisting me to the ceiling where Fern bobbed like a frightened blonde balloon. I flashed her a quick, razor-thin smile. "It'll be okay," I said, pulling two knives out of my shirt. "When I say push, push." Fern nodded mutely. The whites showed all the way around her irises, broadcasting her terror to anyone who cared to look. Megan was still screaming, and under it all, the faint, soothing theme from Mooncake continued to play. Right. This wasn't the time for subtlety. Ramming the point of one knife into the lock on the hatch at the top of the elevator, I shoved the other under the edge, pulling it to the side until it nestled against the latch that held the whole contraption in place. Most elevator access hatches aren't designed to prevent people from breaking into them, since most people aren't tall enough, or don't have a convenient trapeze artist boyfriend to offer a boost. I slammed the heel of my hand against the wedge knife and was rewarded with a popping sound. Grabbing the other knife more firmly, I twisted hard to the left. This time, the pop was louder and accompanied by a snap. "Fern!" I yelled. "Push!" The sylph reached around me and shoved. When nothing happened, probably because she weighed virtually nothing and thus had no leverage behind the motion, she took a breath, shoved again, and fell as she yanked all the density back into her bones. I heard her hit the floor with a crunching thump, like a bowling ball dropped on hardwood. I couldn't look down to see whether she was hurt or whether she had punched a hole straight through the bottom of the elevator. I was busy levering open the crack she'd created, using both my knives to pry the wood apart. Once the opening was large enough, the knives vanished back into my shirt, and I gripped the edge of the hatch, pulling myself onto the top of the elevator. It would be difficult to overstate how much more terrifying everything became once I was crouching on top of a metal box, plummeting through a gray-walled chasm, with braided metal cables whipping lightning fast right next to my face. For a split second, I missed the comfortably mirrored walls of the elevator itself, and the distant, familiar sound of music drained of all power and passion. The moment passed. Comfort isn't worth it when it gets you dead. Poking my head back around the hatch, I held my arms out. "Start passing them up," I yelled. Megan was first. She grabbed hold of the elevator roof until I was pulling Celia up, and then moved to help me. The wind from our fall whipped her wig away, leaving her hissing, agitated snakes exposed. One of them snapped at my cheek, not quite making contact. I chose to focus on getting Celia situated on the roof, then turned back to reach for Fern. Sam was hoisting her up without visible effort. She had bled off her density again, which was probably a good thing given the way her left leg was dangling and the visible pain in her face. I grimaced and swallowed the apology that was threatening to rise up and distract us all from the situation at hand. We were still falling. We wouldn't be falling for much longer. When there's a fall, there's always a stop at the end, and I wanted to avoid that if it was humanly possible. Celia gathered Fern to her side, and Sam hoisted himself out of the elevator, joining the rest of us on the roof. He shot me a quizzical look. I wanted to tell him that I didn't know, that I couldn't know. This sort of thing wasn't what I did. I was supposed to be the useless youngest child, not some sort of messed-up action hero leading her personal A-team through the gates of hell and into a crisis that didn't validate parking. But this was where we were. This was what we had to do. I took a breath. "Grab Megan and Celia and jump," I said. It wasn't a complicated plan. I could see Sam check it against our speed of descent, against the shaft around us, and find it flawed, but feasible. "I love you," he said, and grabbed Celia and Megan, one with each hand, before leaping into the air. There was an elevator landing bay every 10 feet, ledges jutting out into the shaft. I didn't have time to wait and see whether he'd managed to grab one. I needed to trust him. I needed to trust me. I grabbed Fern by the waist. She barely weighed more than a sack of dried leaves, substantial but airy at the same time, her density all but gone. She slung her arms around my neck, holding on for dear life. I jumped. Sam had the kind of strength that my human legs could only dream of. He'd also been making his jump when we were almost 10 feet higher in the elevator shaft. At her current weight, Fern wasn't dragging me down, but neither could she dump her density enough to become truly negative. She could float. She couldn't fly. My feet left the elevator roof, and we curved upward in something between an arc and a prayer, and we were going to fail. We were going to fall again, this time without the elevator to catch us. And while Fern might survive, I was going to die. I was going to be the first price in generations to end where the mice couldn't see, with no one to add my deeds to the family record. Fern clung to me. I closed my eyes. "I'm sorry." Something that felt like a rope, but wasn't, wrapped around my waist and jerked me to a stop at the apex of my small, human leap. The shock of the stop caused me to let go of Fern, who drifted downward more than she fell, finally grabbing hold of my leg and hanging there while she patiently waited for me to recover. "Now I know how Gwen Stacy felt," I muttered, and looked up. Sam was gripping the ledge of the nearest elevator bay with his hands, and holding Megan and Celia with his remarkably prehensile feet, leaving his tail free to keep me from falling to my doom. He offered me a worried, toothy smile.
"Sorry," he said. "I don't date dead girls."
"Probably a good thing," I said. "My grandmother was worried about my grandfather dating Mary for a while, and that caused problems for years."
"Was he?"
"Hell no. Mary doesn't date the living." Megan looked between us, eyes wide and a little frantic.
Hello? Hanging in an elevator shaft? Shouldn't you be getting us out of here?"
"Not yet," I said. Sam shook his head. Megan opened her mouth to object again. There was a terrible crashing, tearing sound below us, accompanied by a billowing wave of dust and smoke and metal particles that slammed upward at a terrifying rate. Sam yanked me closer to the wall. I grabbed hold, tucking my head against my chest and squeezing my eyes tightly closed. Just in time, the worst of the wave flowed over us, ruffling my hair, striking my skin in a dozen places, little stinging specks that would have been so much worse if I hadn't been prepared. Silence followed. When the wave had passed, I cracked an eye open, looking down. Nothing moved. Fern, still clinging to my leg, offered me a wan smile.
"Is it over?"
she asked. "That part is," I said, and looked up. Sam was looking down at me, anxiously, his face showing signs of strain.
"Fern, how bad is your leg?"
"I don't think it's broken," she said.
"If we pass you up to the ledge, can you stand long enough to pry the doors open?"
Fern hesitated before nodding.
"I think so, but how are we going to get me up there?"
I smiled. I hoped she would find the expression encouraging. I knew she probably wouldn't. "Oh well.
I'm going to throw you."
Fern blinked slowly. The gloom in the elevator shaft was deep enough that I couldn't see the fine details of her expression, but I knew her well enough to piece them together in my mind. I waited for her to finish working through the idea, and was rewarded with a smile.
"Like a whip?" she asked.
"Like a whip," I said.
Her smile turned into a grin. Thanks to a certain movie with Ellen Page and Drew Barrymore, The Whip is probably the most famous roller derby move in the world, even though it's relatively infrequent and often ineffective on the track. It looks cool, and that made it the perfect concept to frame a movie around, since "Learn to Fucking Skate, You Look Like Roadkill" is not a good title. Basically, the smallest, lightest skater available, usually the jammer since she's the one we need to speed up, joins hands with a line of her peers, who then use their momentum to whip her down the track, letting her get the sort of distance that would be otherwise impossible. I looked up at Sam.
"I need you to swing me," I said.
"What?" squeaked Megan.
"No."
"Are you doing a whip?"
asked Celia, who had been a derby girl longer than I had and knew what this sort of setup looked like, even when it had become suddenly vertical. I nodded.
"Cool,"
said Celia, as if she weren't hanging from the foot of a therianthrope monkey in an elevator shaft. I decided I liked her more than I had realized. I reached down with both hands. Fern reached up with one, and our hands met, her fingers clasping tightly around mine. She let go of my leg with her other hand, and we were two for two, a line dangling down into the dark. Sam began to swing his tail, haltingly, like it hurt him to do so. It probably did. We were like Rapunzel's prince climbing up her hair, only we were two women hanging from a monkey's tail. There was a joke in there somewhere. I wasn't in the mood to go looking for it just yet. We swung, and I whipped Fern higher and higher until I ran out of reach and let her go, sending her soaring toward the others. Celia grabbed for her and missed, the shorter blonde floating past unhindered. Megan made a panicked squeaking sound. Fern adjusted her density ever so slightly and dropped back into Celia's hands. The loss of momentum and altitude would have been deadly for someone like me, whose mass was fixed. For Fern, it was barely a pause before Celia was whipping her up again. This time, she flew straight and true, grabbing hold of the elevator ledge and hoisting herself up. She winced a little as she put pressure on her left foot, but it held her weight, and kept holding as that weight almost visibly increased, Fern settling deeper and deeper into her position. Once her density was high enough that she didn't have to worry about being whipped away by the faint wind still blowing from below, Fern wedged her fingers into the crack between the doors designed to keep people from falling into the elevator shaft, and began to shove. Strength is important. Strength can be the thing that turns the tide. But leverage is based as much on size as it is on strength, and Fern, for all that she was a dainty, delicate-looking little thing, was also a professional athlete, spending every minute she could strapped into her skates and going for the gold. If roller derby were played at the Olympic level, she would have been trying for the team. She would never have qualified. Good as our little regional team was, there are other, better skaters out there. But she would have made it farther than most people expected. She was good. She was strong. And at the moment, she had the undeniable density of someone five times her size. Fern pushed, and bit by bit, the elevator bay doors responded. They had never been intended to keep people in, after all, only to keep people from falling to their deaths. The doors inched farther and farther open, until she was standing between them, her hands pressed flat against their respective edges, refusing to let them close. "A little help here?" she said. "On it," said Sam, and pulled himself into a handstand with the sort of ease that I could only envy. Celia and Megan, dangling from his feet, appeared to do a slow somersault above me. I was hanging from his tail, and simply found myself hoisted farther out of the hole. Enough farther that I could reach the lip of the ledge. Careful not to dislodge Sam's tail from around my waist, I reached out and grabbed the ledge with both hands, getting a good grip before I angled my body downward. Sam glanced my way, saw what I was doing, and unwrapped his tail from around my waist with an expression of relieved gratitude. Gravity immediately kicked in, my lower body swinging down to slam against the wall in a half-controlled arc. I gritted my teeth, gripped the wall a little tighter, and waited for the impact to stop echoing in my bones. Then, deliberately, I began pulling myself up. Megan and Celia were already on their feet by the time I climbed up to join them. Sam was leaning against one of the elevator bay doors, while Fern leaned against the other. He had his left foot in his hands, and was massaging out the kinks with broad, firm strokes.
"Remind me not to do that again for at least a year," he said, grimacing. "I'm going to be one big ache tomorrow."
"But we'll have a tomorrow, and that's what counts," I said. "Everyone okay?"
"That was better than ziplining," said Celia.
"My hair threw up," said Megan.
I paused. Sadly, that did nothing to dispel the image her words had conjured.
"Ew,"
I said finally. "Come on." I started walking. The others, mercifully, followed, Fern limping. Outside the elevator shaft was a standard Lowry corporate hallway. More brightly colored than, say, an accounting firm, with framed cartoon posters on the walls instead of actuarial tables, but otherwise as featureless and emotionless as any other business in the world. I looked around, frowning. "I wish my cousin Sarah were here," I muttered. "She's our math guru."
"Meaning what?" said Celia.
"Meaning the building tends to get taller when the people on top want it to, and my on-the-fly math skills aren't good enough to tell me how far we fell." According to the plaque next to the elevator, we were on the fifth floor. That should have been the top. We'd fallen a hell of a lot farther than that.
"Can we take the stairs?" asked Fern.
They could be 100 floors high, I said. Then I paused.
Wait. No, they can't.
Please pick one. This is making my head hurt, said Megan.
Emily's a route witch. She's the one doing their distance work.
Distance is a constant. How far we fell is how far we have to climb, and we didn't fall 100 floors.
We fell a long way, but not that long.
I looked at the elevator shaft.
Sam followed my gaze and shook his head.
No, I might be able to climb to the top. I could probably even carry one of you. But I can't carry everyone, and I'm not leaving all our backup behind. Not going to happen.
I thought you were letting me lead this, I said.
Only as long as I'm also keeping you alive,
he replied firmly.
Keeping you alive is the most important thing I'm doing right now.
I'm touched, really, said Celia. Her tone was dry, but her expression was sympathetic.
Although I care more about my own skin than the monkey seems to, he's not entirely wrong. We're not doing anything that ups our chance of being slaughtered.
Do they know we're still alive? Asked Megan. If I'd dropped an elevator on somebody, I'd figure they were dead.
Her snakes were standing on end, tongues flicking constantly. That, more than anything else, told me how much rage was behind her calm exterior.
Megan was a medical resident who just happened to be a Gorgon. She'd never been thrown down an elevator shaft before. She was pissed.
Maybe, I said.
Maybe not.
Megan nodded.
Then we take the stairs. She looked around at the rest of us, neutral expression melting into a scowl that Medusa herself would have admired. Nobody drops me down a hole. I smiled.
Chapter 22. Tired is for after the battle ends. Tired is for winners. Losers get to sleep a lot longer, and they don't wake up again. Jane Harrington Price. Climbing up a lot of stairs. The stairs did not go on forever. That would have been impossible. If route witches had been able to extend mundane stairways past the limit of Earth's gravity, like some Phineas and Ferb nightmare science adventure, they would have found a way to boost the space program decades ago. Roads crisscrossing the solar system, distances that planet-bound route witches could only dream of. Oh, they would never have let us stay within the grasp of gravity, no matter how much they enjoyed using it as a weapon. The stairs did, however, go on for a long, long time. Celia, Fern, and I were all used to skating for hours, and while we weren't exactly thrilled by the climb, we managed with relative ease once Fern figured out the exact balance she needed to strike between density and injury. I took point, a knife in each hand and fingers aching for fire. Celia was close behind me, ready to pull me out of the way if something loomed. Sam brought up the middle, Megan slung over his shoulder like a sack of potatoes. She wasn't protesting. The Gorgon was in reasonably good shape, but she was also a med grad student, and this sort of thing wasn't part of her daily rounds at the hospital. Letting her walk would have slowed us down considerably, and Sam didn't seem to have a problem carrying her. Fern finished our procession, stepping light. So light that she frequently launched herself several feet into the air, landing on a higher step as gently as a feather drifting back to Earth. She was moving slower than any of the rest of us, but still keeping pace through the sheer dint of taking the steps so many at a time. Every time we reached a landing, we would stop, tensing, while I cracked the door open and looked through. For the past 8 floors, what I'd seen on the other side was the same hallway. The exact same hallway. Emily could bend space and distort distance, but route witches can't actually create what isn't there. The strange other space I had walked through the first time I'd come to this building had been the creation of one of the other magic users. That was worrisome. One of the members of the Lowryland Cabal. The only ones I was absolutely sure of were Emily, Colin the Sorcerer, and Joshua the Train Spotter. The others were a nebulous mass of faces and ill-defined abilities. Belatedly, I realized that should have been another warning sign. Yes, I was Colin's student.
Yes, it was reasonable that he was my primary contact with the rest of the Cabal. But when I'd joined my roller derby team, there had been a big mixer for me and the rest of the fresh meat so we could understand what we were getting ourselves into. When I joined the cheerleading squad, we'd all gone out for pizza to get to know each other, because the people in charge understood that without the pom-poms and spirit fingers, most of us would never have been friends. Even my employment as a low-level Lowryland cast member had started with team-building exercises. If the Cabal had really wanted me as a member of their team, they would have treated me like a member of the team, not shunted me into a corner where Colin could keep an eye on me. I had been so blinded by the possibility of getting myself under control that I hadn't paid attention to the parts of the narrative that didn't fit, the ones designed to keep me on the outside and out of the way. Saying this was all my fault would have been sheer arrogance, untrue and unhelpful. These people had been spinning their spells and doing their damage long before I'd come on the scene. But I'd made them stronger, whether I'd intended to or not, and I'd been part of the damage they'd done since I'd agreed to let them have access to me. I needed to fix this. We were approaching another landing. I motioned for the others to stop, eased the door open, and peeked through the crack into the wood and mirrors training room. We were here. We were finally, after so many stairs, here. I looked over my shoulder and nodded. Sam put Megan down. She stepped forward, joining Celia at my back, and reached for her sunglasses. She didn't remove them, not yet, but with her hand on the frame, she was armed and dangerous. No more waiting. No more walking. It was time to move. I pushed the door open, and we stepped through. The room where Colin had conducted the bulk of my training was empty. We moved to the center of the floor, which seemed the least likely location for a trap door, and stopped, looking carefully around. Back home, I had a reputation for digging pit traps and otherwise making my siblings' lives difficult. I studied the walls and floor, looking for places where the wood grain didn't line up the way it should have, or where an angle seemed ever so slightly wrong. I didn't find them. Either there were no traps in this room, or they were too well hidden for me to see them. Or something else was going on. I looked at the mirror. Our reflections looked back at me, Megan still mercifully wearing her sunglasses. Stunning myself with friendly fire would have been one hell of a capper on an already lousy evening. "Everyone get ready," I said, drew a knife, and flung it as hard and as true as I could toward the dead center of the glass. The sort of throwing knives we used at the carnival are light, designed for distance more than damage. They can travel a long way, but if you're aiming for something solid, you're more likely to blunt your blade than you are to actually break anything. If you're aiming for something solid. My knife hit the glass and the mirror shattered, shards falling harmlessly to the ground to reveal a concrete box of a room, more basement than anything else, with a set of gridded steel stairs leading downward. My heart leaped into my throat. It was the room Emily had led me through on my first visit. And that meant those stairs ended in the conference room. "We're almost there," I said, flexing my fingers again. There was still no fire, but the heat of my anger made up for it. "Mind the glass." Shards of mirror crunched underfoot as I walked toward the opening I'd created, pausing only to retrieve my knife. When I reached the edge of the mirror, I paused, turned, and motioned for the others to stay back. "Give me a second," I said. "Sam, be ready to pull me out." He nodded. Megan looked confused. "Pull her out?" she asked. "Why?" "In case it's booby-trapped," said Fern cheerfully, like she was explaining a particularly clever derby maneuver. "It probably is. It would be if it were my dark, creepy room behind a big glass sheet." Megan's mouth dropped open. She looked to Celia for support. Celia shrugged. "This is life outside a gated community," she said. "It gets weird." We could banter for hours. That was nice. Banter's comforting, which is probably why Spider-Man does it so much. But it wasn't getting us any closer to done. Sam was the fastest person I'd ever met, human or cryptid. If anyone could get me out of the way before some death trap slammed closed over my head, it was him, and I trusted him to do it. I trusted him completely. Maybe this was what love felt like. Smiling despite myself, I turned to face front, took a deep breath, and stepped over the base of the broken mirror into the dark basement, which promptly burst into superheated flame around me. I screamed. Most of my training focused on powering through sprains and even broken bones, learning how to walk on a twisted ankle without making a sound that might give away my position. But my parents, hard-nosed as they sometimes were in the pursuit of preparing us to survive in a world filled with dangers, had never actually set me on fire. I'd never even set myself on fire before, not really. I'd scalded my arms and blistered my palms, but I had never burned from head to toe. I had never been consumed. I wasn't being consumed now. I couldn't be. A thought hit like a blow. There was as much fire as I could feel around me. I wouldn't have had the time to scream. I would have been reduced to ashes in an instant, and I'd be either gone or a ghost. Ghosts don't burn. I looked at my arms, struggling to swallow the screams rising in my throat. They were untouched, perfectly smooth and fine. The heat felt real. The fire felt real. My skin did not agree. I looked back. Sam was slapping at the flames in the opening, trying to get through the fire to get to me, fighting his own instincts. He wasn't calm enough to see that his hands were as untouched as mine. When he pulled them out of the illusion of the flame, it was only to shove them back in again, struggling to save me. He was crying. He was fighting and he was crying, and I wondered what he saw when he looked at me. Couldn't be an anguished but intact woman or he wouldn't be fighting so hard. We had both seen stranger than someone walking untouched through fire. And he'd seen me set myself alight more than once without ill effects, although my fire could hurt me. And only danced when it was still connected to my skin. To my skin. I turned back to the flames, looking at them with wide eyes. The pain was receding. Either the nerves responsible for relaying sensation were giving up in the face of an enemy too great to be described, or the fire was changing. The fire was recognizing me. Sam, can you hear me? I called. Annie? There was a clattering sound, followed by a hiss and an anguished, I can't reach you. Annie, are you all right? What do you see, Sam? A hitching, indrawn breath, and then a soft, I can't reach you. That answered the question of what he saw when he looked at me. I'm fine, Sam. I was surprised and I was in pain, but I'm not hurt. The fire isn't really burning me. Because the fire was mine. And once it had realized that, it had started pulling back. It wasn't intelligent as such. Fire knows how to burn, and not much more than that. But it belonged to me. It belonged with me. And it wanted to come home. I looked at the flames dancing all around me, licking at the air, and I knew they wanted to come home. I just didn't know how to let them. I'm sorry, I said, holding out my hands, fingers spread, palms toward the ceiling. The heat was entirely gone now, replaced by a pleasant coolness. Sam was still fighting the illusion of the fire, but not as hard. He could hear me. Even if he couldn't quite believe me, he knew I was at least intact enough to talk. I thought I was learning to control you, and instead I was letting someone take you away from me. I should never have done that. Can you forgive me? The flame burned blue, pressing in closer, until everything was fire. And there wasn't room in the world for anything else. I kept my eyes and hands open. I don't know how to take you back, I said softly. If you know how to come back on your own, come home. If you don't, please, pull back. Let my friends help me, and we'll make the bastard who put you here put you back where you belong. This room wasn't real. I'd known that the first time I'd stepped into it. The water table was too high, and the walls were too thick. Magic had made this place, and magic was sustaining it. And it only made sense that they would put the pieces of my magic that they weren't using in what was effectively the largest bell jar they had available to them. The flames rose for a single, heart-stopping moment, before they sank back into the floor and were gone. I could still feel them the way I'd always been able to feel them lurking in my fingers, but distant, like they and I were both swaddled in a whole roll of bubble wrap. I didn't have time to think about what that meant, as Sam slammed into me from the side the instant the flames faded, literally sweeping me off my feet and carrying me easily 4 feet deeper into the room.
not a good idea from a trap avoidance standpoint. But then he was kissing me, and I had other things to worry about, like kissing him back, while his tail wrapped around my waist and pulled me closer, until I was in danger.